I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, the size of fuel tanks.
Yeah, Rich, what we doing then? Where are we going with this? Let's get the maracas out. Yeah. Oi, Keith, stop messing around with the carburetors on my XJS. All right, here we go.
He's running, Rich.
R.I.P. Charlie Watts.
I know.
The drummer in the most successful band in the world that possibly didn't want to be in it. Amazing, really.
It was a bit sad. I like a man who just pursues a good suit at all costs. Because drumming's a sweaty business, isn't it?
Drumming is a sweaty business. You're absolutely
but he
right.
was always well turned out, Charlie Watts.
He was always well turned out, yeah. Oh, but there's a lot of people that almost can't believe that he had died, and it's like he's a Rolling Stone. None of them should still be alive, and he reached
it.
80. I mean, seriously, 80 as a Rolling Stone. That's in in human years. That's about 140, isn't it?
Easily.
You know, like
in Rolling Stone years. Yeah, he was 80.
Got dog years, cat years, and stone years.
Stone years?
Amazing. Why? Here, Charlie. Oi. Hey, Charlie, how old are you?
Is everyone feeling immortal? we shouldn't do it. It's sad, but I'd put money on Keith being the last stone to drop.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if Betfred have already started taking cashish for that. I bet they have, haven't they?
The thing that Keith Richards said once about how all the years that he was on heroin, he never got a cold.
Oh, great.
He's sort of, yeah, I think he said that. He's very much a sort of ongoing medical experiment.
I was going to say, well, you don't get diarrhea when you're on Class A's. You get quite the opposite. So is that a good thing?
I don't know.
Yeah, apparently you get completely backed up, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, because I read an interview once with Elton John where he was talking about his heavy cocaine years, and he said that he'd sort of get up in the morning, have an enormous line of Charlie, and then he'd need to go for a poo because it was cut with baby laxative.
Oh, nice. That's really nice.
So
before Joe Wicks, we had 70s Elton John.
That's how I stayed in shape, love.
Yeah, so let's start with some invisible ladder climbs and then do a really big line of boot tross and then let's get the piano out.
And trousers down and poop.
Amazing publicity photos of Elton John outside his then new house. It would have been in the 70s, early to mid 70s, where he's got all of his vehicles lined up. I think it was a 70s pop star thing.
Yes.
Where you obviously the photographer was booked. They'd be like, listen, guys, you're going to have to, and Keith Moon from The Who was good at this, line everything else up outside your house so we can see your wealth. We just want to display your wealth. And then obviously you've got to have one leg up on the tyre, like William Woolard style. And it was great. There's one of Elton, and he's got a Rolls Camargue. He's got everything, in fact, from a Rolls Camargue and a wooden picket Mini to like a little mini bike. It's not a Honda Monkey bike. It's one of those ones that has sort of a lawnmower engine that you pull and then you just go. You can imagine the terrible accidents that he had in his stately home lawn on that. But it's those shots. I absolutely love those. And I got pointed to some of those shots by my friend Kieran, who runs Rockstars Cars, he's constantly trying to hunt down vehicles owned by musicians and rock stars, and he's unearthed some incredible photos, I have to say, and some incredible cars that have been lost and then found. But yeah,
I've just written a profile of Noel Edmonds for the Road Rat magazine. In fact, it's in the new issue.
Of course, you have.
I say issue. If anyone's seen the Road Rat, you'll know that basically it's a quarterly magazine. It's a volume.
It's a
hefty tome, and the 8th edition has just come out. It's really good, lots of stuff in it, and then my thing as well, which is a profile of Noel Edmonds. And in the course of researching it, I found one of those shots that you're talking about, and it's from the 70s, and it's Noel, and I know where this is. It's in a little sort of private road in Hampstead, where I guess he lived at the time. And it's Noel in quite a tasty pair of flares with his lovely first wife, Gillian.
Yeah.
And they're leaning on Noel's GT40.
Of course.
But in the background, there's a Jensen Interceptor, and one of those little Honda Zeds, you know, those funny little...
Oh, the Z600?
Yeah.
The one that's always orange?
It's orange as well.
They're all orange. They were all orange.
Yeah.
That car is so cool. Blummin' love those cars.
So I'm guessing, I mean... I don't want to be stereotypical and say that was Gillian's car, but it maybe she had the Interceptor. Honda was Noel's way of getting down to Broadcasting House to do his radio show, perhaps.
Oh, and he was a jolly shock jock back then, so he'd wave at everyone and beat the horn at all costs.
Yes.
Whereas Gillian was just sat in traffic, heavy breathing in the Interceptor, which was just... Can you imagine
that? Petrol again. Oh, he's another tank of 5-star in it.
driving that
not
round.
The band that got called wankers on Saturday Superstore. I mean the petrol that you used to get.
I
in the course of writing this, I won't spoil it because people should go out and buy the Road Rack. It's an excellent publication. But in the course of research,
have they paid to advertise on this podcast, Rich?
No, they haven't actually. I'm just giving them free plugs because I work for them. But they haven't paid me for writing the article yet either. But now we've come.
They
down
can pay
to
you
it.
A Noel Edmonds photo. Photography.
Yeah. I was sort of trying to research what cars Noel had had, and it's quite a spread. I didn't really get into it. I emailed his agent, and his agent didn't reply to me. So, because Noel's moved to New Zealand now.
Has he really moved to New Zealand?
Yeah. His wife just up sticks and went to New Zealand a couple of years ago, I think.
What, from Devon?
In Devon, wasn't he? Yeah. Well, now he's not.
Is he officially retired from... making unusually successful TV shows now, or is he...
I think he sort of has, but I read something that said he was sort of trying to set up some radio projects in New Zealand. Because he did all that internet radio stuff here, didn't he? He did like a radio station for cats and things, which it was all a bit nutty, but...
Well, he was a little bit out there with his Q-pod and his negative energy...
The negative energy is a big thing, I think. And I think that's maybe why people are sometimes a bit dismissive about Noel Edmonds, because they think he's a bit crackers. But if you look at his career, you know, he's managed to hold on in TV and radio for sort of 50-odd years, and that takes some doing.
And he's got an incredible hair, a head of hair.
Incredible hair. He is your quintessential camtail, I think. He's got a really
The original television entertainer's camtail, follicle camtail.
Light entertainment aero package in hair form.
Is it the Visac pack, or would it be something...
Yeah.
What would you call that if it was the television light entertainment?
I don't know. It just gives him a little bit of extra downforce for high-speed broadcasting, which...
He can crouch into the microphone when he does radio. He'll go in, ready? Yeah. He'll be like this. He'll go... So next week we've got the incredible new show coming in. I'm just a little bit lower because the camtail's brought me into land. I can't lift my head up. I could possibly reach
pressed
my teeth
to the microphone. He's also the beard. I found a picture of him without the beard, and it's really weird because your brain fills in the beard. it's impossible to comprehend a photograph of Noel Edmonds without his beard.
I bet he looks much less handsome.
Yeah, it doesn't work. He is very much a man who needs a beard.
Yeah, he's a beard needer.
But what I like as well is that his beard and his hairstyle have weathered all fashion storms. It doesn't matter what the style of the day is.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, the beard went out, didn't it? The beard in the early 80s, I would say, the beard sort of...
Yeah. It was all about moustaches or very clean shaven for the sort of
very clean
look.
Shaven. You get into your sort of quintessential 80s, your sort of, I would say, absolute peak 80s in this country was the second Thatcher administration, so 83 to 87, in terms of red braces, Guards red 911s, Golf GTIs, all of those cliches, but also
wet shave twice a day.
Scrupulously, yeah, clean shaven to the point of going through to the bone. And Noel Edmonds just went, mm-mm. Got a look going on, and I am sticking to it. And you'll see, you'll all be back to beards. And he was right, because come the 21st century, men are beardy again.
Do you know what
and
it
Noel's
is, though?
Just sat there with his arms folded going, I knew you'd be back.
Noel's always gone for the close crop beard. It's never been wild and wiry. And I do like the close crop beard. He's always kept it quite tight to the jawline.
His morning beard management routine must be pretty intricate, I reckon, because he doesn't. That's the thing, you never see a picture of Noel with a shoddy beard.
Well, maybe that's what the little Z600 was. He'd get up at, he'd get up because he kept himself in trim. He's never been fat, Noel Edmonds.
No,
super trim. So he probably got up sort of 5 in the morning, I can't remember what his DJ slot was. He'd go for a run, and he'd get straight in the Z600 and go to his favourite place for lunch, for breakfast. But there's a barber shop next door, and they would do him just a 2-minute little manicure. What do they? No, yeah. Like a topiary. You know those people that do those ornamental yeah. hedges that are shaped like cockerels and bellends and stuff. Those those people. those ones, and yeah. I think that he would do that. So every day, it was just little and often. A bit like those robot mowers, like the ones that Honda make, where the principle yes. is that it doesn't really carve your lawn up. Every day, it just flicks a couple of blades trimmed. Here and there, and you can't even notice it. And it doesn't need a grass box. So his beard doesn't need a grass box either, because it's just little and often, little and often. It's dead easy.
Yeah.
Dead easy.
I'm now wondering what he'd have from the breakfast place, no, the cafe. I mean, it'd be a cafe, wouldn't it? People hadn't. It's the early 80s.
Yeah, it was early 80s.
Or the late 70s.
Would he have found an Italian place?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, because then he could have. Because the thing is, your classic would be a bacon sandwich, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but he's not. He's
but you
he's
can't
trim.
Be trim and eat a bacon sandwich every morning. It's not really compatible.
Is he granola guy? Older. 80s granola
in guy? In the 80s, though? He might have moved into muesli. I don't think granola was around, was it?
I don't bloody
not
know.
In any sort of meaningful way.
So granola and quality coffee and maybe some pineapple chunks, but not the ones from tins, you know, actual carved up.
I don't know. That's a bit exotic as well. It's the early 80s.
Yeah, but he's a rich chap. He lives in Hampstead. You know, it's cosmopolitan, yeah. Remember? Come on.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Or are we getting it all wrong? And did he just wake up, roll out of bed, light a cigarette, he'd go down to his local cafe, bacon sandwich, quick shisha, get in their Z600 and weave his way into BBC Radio.
A 9,000 RPM commute through North London.
He just leaves it in first because he knows it'll take it. I used to have a mate who had a car like that. He'd never shift into fourth when he was properly nailing it. And I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, it's okay, it can take it. And it did, take it.
What was the car?
It's a Cavalier SRI 130.
Oh well,
of course.
Oh, okay. Strong engine, right?
Because his principle was, you know, the roads that we were driving hard on, they were never worthy of fourth gear. They were never quite fast enough. So he would much prefer 6,000 in third. So that's what he did.
Good.
Do you know any mates like that?
I know some poor gear change strategy people.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. We mentioned this before about mates of mine who had a Mini, had an original Mini, so it's only got a 4-speed box on it, and then we rented a Fiesta to drive from Cardiff to Edinburgh, and on the motorway, he never put it in fifth unless I reminded him, because he just wasn't used to having fifth gear. But it happened so often, I think I started to become a little bit narky about it and
never
put it in fifth. He was the one who would zoom. And at one point, we were on a clear dual carriageway and you could see for miles ahead up in Scotland somewhere. And there's nothing around except in the distance you can see, you know, one of those 8-wheel dumper trucks lumbering slightly uphill in the inside lane. And we're zooming along and I think he's even put it into fifth. There is no other traffic. It's so quiet. And he zoomed right up to the back of the dumper truck and then braked and just sat behind it.
What?
And I went, go round!
What, so he
really
didn't see
way.
Round it all the way?
It's just that the complete lack of awareness and forward planning. And he just slowed down right behind it and
gosh.
Then sort of started to think, ooh, maybe we should go round. And it's just like, you could have pulled out without indicating because there's nobody to indicate to. You didn't even have the stress of operating the indicators. Just go round.
I know, I have of those moments too.
Now, we've sort of started reasonably topically because we mentioned Charlie Watts, who only died last week. But then I think I said in the last show, oh, it's a slow news time. It's August. There's nothing going on. Completely overlooking that Nissan had announced a new Z car that week. And and we didn't mention
which
it
they announce every 24 years. And we just totally.
And I think when was that? 2 weeks ago they announced it anyway. But it's not coming to this country, so in a way it's sort of irrelevant for us. But
yeah, they'll come in though, won't they? They'll come in right-hand drive Japanese form.
Well, yeah, because they'll just get people getting from Japan.
Yeah, or Australia.
Is it going to Australia? I don't know.
I'd be surprised if it doesn't. I'd be very surprised if it doesn't. Maybe some NZs or Aussie listeners might be able to give us some intel, but I think they would. Funny enough, I was thinking the other day about is the next gen GT 86. That's
which is now called the GR 86.
It is called the GR 86. The GR 86.
GR 86.
And do you not feel sorry for the Supra? Because since the Yaris, the GR Yaris came out, and now the GR, the thingy, what you just said, I've totally forgotten what it's called.
GR86.
Nobody seems to care about the Supra, and I think it's wrong. And of course, they brought a 2-litre version out, which I haven't driven, and I do want to try it.
I've driven that.
Have you?
Yeah, I just couldn't think of a single reason why you'd have one.
Oh, is it one
of
them?
It's not a bad car. It's not a brilliant car. It's very... you'd think, it's got a bit less weight over the nose. That's good. That's a good thing, right? And it's just... It's a very... You know, good sort of driving cars on a nice road, you get into a lovely rhythm with them. They flow along. And there's lots of factors involved in that. But often it's the sort of... One of the subtle but important nuances is that all of the inputs that you make to the car have the same... proportionate reaction. So the steering ratio is somehow in tune with the way the dampers react to crests and humps and lumps and stuff like that, and the throttle response and the brake response are sort of somehow in tune. And it's one of those things about setting up cars that's an underrated thing, and some people always seem to get it pretty much right and some people don't. And that Supra, to me, it just wasn't... it was hard to drive smoothly. It twitches, it turns into corners in a very twitchy way because it's got a short wheelbase and the steering's quite quick. But then the responses from the automatic gearbox can be a little bit sluggish, even in sport mode. And it's a staccato car to drive, and I don't like that. I like a flowing, smooth car to drive. And the GR Yaris is exactly that. The GR Yaris is a great car to get into a rhythm with, as you know. You're just nailing down sort of interesting B roads, and it's completely on your side, and everything just sort of feels of a piece, and you feel good. And the Supra never gets there. It's just weird. It's got slightly snatchy brakes as well. It's just that all adds to this feeling that it's a bit angular and it shouldn't be. So I just thought, there's so many good cars you can buy.
Maybe the GR 86 instead.
So I was just listening to a review. I haven't read any reviews of it because I forgot to read. I mean, not forgot how to read. I forgot to read any of them, but because the US journalists have reviewed it. But I was listening to Matt Farah on the Smoking Tire podcast reviewing it and speaking very highly of it, not literally. And I thought it sounded like they've sort of addressed some of the things that people weren't sure about with the old one. Noticeably, the torque seems like they've increased the engine capacity a little bit and moved the torque peak down to a reasonable sort of low. I think 3.5.
That's good, because that was the thing that annoyed me about it.
And I really like the way it looks. I think it looks way better than the old one, because it's... I think the proportion, the dimensions are the same, but somehow it looks... I always thought that the old one was a bit pencilly. It looked quite sort of long and thin somehow, even though it wasn't actually that long. Do you know what I mean?
Pencilly?
Like a pencil. Pencils are long and thin, aren't they?
Yeah.
And the new one, it looks almost like it's got wider and shorter. It's just proportionally, I think it's just got better proportions.
I think the new one, the GR86, looks a bit like a Nissan Z car.
Yes.
At the front. But
Z car is a very pencilly car, very long and thin looking.
It's a very pencilly car. Basically, the GR86 is a better looking car than the current F-Type.
Ooh.
I think. Because I just think, the front of the revised F-Type just doesn't work, I'm afraid. I've tried to like it, but it looks older and worse than the original. And the original was a really good looking car, so...
I saw one the other day. I saw a new F-Type, which, first of all, I was completely surprised to see a brand new F-Type. It's just like, bloody hell, someone's bought one. That's
why haven't
amazing.
People bought them?
I don't know.
Because
I really
the previous one,
look at them.
Yeah,
the
previous
ones are quite affordable.
I think they're incredible. And every time you hear one, and I do like the V6. I'm one of these people that would have the V6 rather than the V8 almost, because
Yeah, V6S is, I think, the one.
The V6S is just a great car, and it sounds right. It sounds Jaggy. Jags do like they do well with sixes, and I just thought, why wouldn't you? I think that's a really, really enjoyable car, and it's handsome.
The thing. I looked at them because you could get. I mean, what are they down to now? They're in the 20s, I think, aren't they?
Should we have a quick goosey? Shall we?
And I was like, when I was going to buy my Porsche, I sort of thought, oh, hang on, we have enough time. In fact, we were in traffic a few weeks ago. In the car, as a family, and we were in the next lane. In the next lane was an F-Type, and unprovoked, my wife just went, "That's such a good-looking car," and I said,
"Oh, but it is, especially the bum of the coupe."
Yeah, well, this was a coupe, and it just looked. And she's right; it is. I think it's a very, very nice-looking car, and I went, "Well, you know, we could sell the 911 and get one of those and pocket some change as well." And she went, "What, could we?" Like, I think she didn't believe that they were, you know,
that
affordable.
Cheap.
But yeah, I looked at it. But then, of course, it's just the thing about having a back seat is useful if you have small children. So then the F-Type's a two-seater. I think I mentioned this once to ex-Jaguar designer Ian Callum. And he said they looked at doing a sort of shooting brake with seats in the back.
Oh, stop it.
They did.
Oh my God! Can you imagine that with a composite back end on it? You know those ones where they make a shoot like a coach built shooting brake. Oh my God!
But this is factory. Like they I don't know how far it got, but he certainly said it was. They worked on it in the design department, and then I guess management just couldn't see a case for it. So
I apologise.
Yeah, maybe we should badger Ian to let us see some sketches or something.
Oh well, I apologise to listeners if you could have just heard my keyboard clattering. I've just I'm having a quick gander at early F types, 2013s, 2014s, $30,000, $27,000, $30,000, $25,000. There's one. There's a V6S quick shift.
And they all say that, don't they? Yeah.
97,000 miles, so high miles. It's $25,000. Quite nice, and it looks good actually.
What colour is it?
It looks like it could be BRG. My colour blindness is sort of kicking in a bit.
Is this the one here? 25385.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's black.
Is that black?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. It's my colour blindness kicking in.
So that, I mean, it looks mega. It's black,
it's
got good wheels. It's
$25,000.
It's the cabrio, it's got a cream leather interior.
Oh,
what is the
gosh.
Worst that can happen, apart from complete electrical failure, I suppose?
apart from the car just lunching itself. Yeah,
but
apart
God,
from
that looks good. And it's even got those optional gold paddles and gold start button, which is, you know, it's quite an amusing little design gimmick, isn't it? I like
there's
that.
There's a V8. There's V8. V8s for 38.
But like you said, V6 all the way.
Yeah, I would
there's,
go V6.
There's another S here for 26,400, which
it.
Has got... it hasn't actually, it's 79,000 miles on it. It's got those really good sort of turbine wheels on it that I quite like on those. Again,
oh, yes.
Convertible.
Yeah.
It's also black or very dark grey, I can't quite tell. And it looks mega. It's got a black leather interior. I actually quite like the light coloured one. Anyway, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Browsing F-Types, the new podcast.
Yeah,
from
what a great oral treasure this is.
Yes, looking at pictures and likely
up.
Describing them. But anyway, F-Types are in the 20s now, and they're lovely cars. I don't know what else to add to that, except that they are. They're nice.
I bet Noel Edmonds has got one. He just doesn't talk about it.
From what I could gather of his car history, he liked a Jag. He had XJSs, or at least one XJS in the 80s, and he's had a DB9, and he had a Scimitar in the 70s.
Of course he did.
So he's quite patriotic, I think, in his car buying choices.
Patriotic sports car purchasing. What's that? PSCP.
PSCP.
Yes.
Patriotic sports car purchase.
Yes.
That's a
podcast waiting to happen. Someone will nick that.
Yeah. This week, I've bought a TVR.
Next week, we all shout at people that buy Porsches.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say to my wife, good news, dear, I've sold the Porsche because it's time for a PSCP. which my wife will now be on board of, because last week she became a British citizen.
Did she?
Yeah. Well, she's still got her American citizenship, but she is now dual citizenship. So she's one of us.
That's brilliant. What did she do? Did you wrap a big flag around her and sort of baptise her in carling?
Yeah.
You swaddled her in a Union Jack and laid her down in some lager.
Yeah, and then I made the sign of the Union flag on her forehead in gravy. And then we went to the pub.
You were already in the pub. That was the embarrassing part.
Well, so there's a little ceremony, and parts of it were slightly awkward. And I went, "This is so British," because some of it is slightly embarrassing. But I said to her beforehand, "What are you going to wear for your ceremony?" And she threatened that she was going to buy and wear an American flag dress just to prove she's not giving up her roots. She was joking. She didn't do that.
But she kept it British and she wore tracky bottoms, yeah?
Yeah. Just tracky bottoms and one of those sort of slightly shapeless vests.
And a Mackenzie shell top.
Vaped heavily during all parts of the ceremony. So.
That's right. Good. Did you turn up in a Focus ST that was absolutely banging off the limiter?
A Nova 3-door with a red top transplant in it.
Sweet. Can you rent those especially for the ceremonial use?
Yeah. It's got a big Union flag on the boot lid and obviously clear indicators as well.
What were you listening to? Windows were obviously down.
Basically,
what were you listening to?
A medley of UK garage hits from the early 2000s.
Oh, cool. That's good.
Because garage, I mean, what's more British than UK garage? There's no US garage, except there sort of is, but it means something different. And so, yeah, who a bit of Shanks and Bigfoot? It's what Her Majesty would want.
Yeah. It's early Craig David, Artful Dodger. I'm trying to think of other. I never liked UK garage. I always found it irritating, a bit like a pitch on your back.
Was it the sort of brisk skippity hoppity beats that got on your nerves?
I was just always. It was drum and bass for me, so always like, why would you listen to UK garage when drum and bass exists? That was always my.
But do you like all drum and bass, or where were you? Because
I like tuneful, soulful.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's it. The sort of scary, dark D&B was a bit much for me, I think.
I have been in clubs where sinister D&B has been on the menu, and it feels a bit like you're in a horror film, and you expect someone to come out of the crowd with a chainsaw.
No, that's so like murky D&B reminds me of being in possibly not entirely legal party in Birmingham drinking Red Stripe and being scared.
I was in Birmingham yesterday, weirdly.
When you messaged me and said, you messaged me and went, "I'm in Birmingham driving this car," and I wrote, "How is it?" And then you told me how Birmingham is, not how the car is, which was really my question.
And what did I say?
You said it was windy and there was lots of litter, or sunny and there's lots of litter.
Sunny and a lot of litter. And it's true. It was very litter-ridden.
Mm.
It's a littery city.
I don't remember it being
shame.
A littery city. Well, as opposed to a littery city. Like you might say Dublin is a littery city, but Birmingham littery is different, but it's confusing. I don't remember it being more or less littery than any other city, but maybe it's got worse.
I was reviewing the BMW iX3, the electric X3. And we were filming it around there, and I realised I was in a BMW, and everyone around me, when we were trying to do some filming on some of the sort of bypass type roads, everyone who was driving fast and jerky with loud music was all in BMWs. There was a couple of murdered out Audis, but it was mostly BMWs, and it was some absolute pedigree undertaking going on in heavy traffic, real hard swerving.
Birmingham's good for that, though, because it's got a lot of urban dual carriageways, I think.
Yeah,
Above average number, I think, I reckon. It's quite dual carriageway-y. Where were you in Birmingham? Which area?
I was in Digbeth area and sort of Perry Bar.
Yeah.
And there was
Why
a lot
were
of...
Why you in Birmingham? What's the link?
Well, I wanted some interesting, gritty city, but also the videographer I was... was working with. He's based in Bristol, and I'm based in Lincolnshire, and there was no need for him to come all the way to me or me to go all the way to him. And I just went, let's just do it in Birmingham. It's easy for both. We can get there. Yeah. Nay bother. And I know some interesting districts.
You weren't tempted to go all the way to Bristol so you could pick up some cargo pants and a hypercolour T-shirt? And
yeah, I was very. I'd like to have a weekend in Bristol. I've not had a weekend in Bristol in too long.
The '90s weekender in Bristol.
Yeah, I'll have to pick up some Marlboro Reds, and I'll probably get my Gola trainers out. But when I do, it's gonna be epic. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that moment, actually. I think I've got a Leveller. You got a Leveller's T-shirt? I haven't.
I think it's actually stuffed inside a pair of Oxblood DMs somewhere in the loft. So I'll.
Oh yeah. Dig amazing.
Obviously you're going to do a video review of the iX3, but it occurred to me that it looks like it's called the X3, which is how people in New Zealand have been describing the medium-sized SUV.
Oh yeah,
for years.
Or is it endorsed by Jackie
Ickx? that was the name of his jazz band in the
late 60s, Jackie Ickx 3, that's right. That was his jazz ensemble.
Yeah.
Smooth yeah, the Dave sounds. Clark 4 or whatever it is, the Dave Clark, and then you have the Jackie Ickx 3.
Yeah.
I have to say, I won't go into too much detail because I want people to watch the video, but it's quite a confusingly named car in so much as it's not related to the i3 whatsoever, and it has an X in the name, so you assume that it's four-wheel drive, but it isn't. You can't buy it in four-wheel drive, it's only rear-wheel drive.
It's not? Oh, I didn't realise that.
It's single motor, rear-wheel drive, so it's actually... I do genuinely think some people will buy it, not even asking the question whether or not it's going to be four-wheel drive, and it isn't. It's always going to be rear-wheel drive, single motor.
But then some X3s are only rear-wheel drive, are they not?
They are, yeah. So really, it's a crossover rather than an SUV, SUV. But to be honest with you, I don't care, because crossovers and SUVs are all sort of merging, blobbing into one now. But what I would say is it drives like a proper BM. It does actually drive like a proper BM and all that. And the EV drivetrain's quite impressive. Fifth generation e-drive and all that.
Amusing fact about that car is that it received a facelift before it even went on sale here.
Yeah, that's what I don't even... I mean, trying to work that out when I was doing the feature, it was like, you know, I'm just going to not bother mentioning that because it just confuses British people.
Well, so the one you had was the facelift one, presumably. They didn't.
Yes.
Because it went on sale, as I understand it, went on sale in Germany in January this year, pre-facelift, and then last month they announced the facelift before any had been sold in this country, so we only get the facelift one.
But
in Germany, there are a few people who had the... In future years, if any ever appear in classic car adverts, it'll be like, rare pre-facelift model, because it was only sold for eight months or something.
Oh, it absolutely will be. It will be completely that. Yeah.
I can't imagine, though, that there'd be much sort of classic... Well, you say this, but God knows, lots of stuff we thought was just sort of landfill is now highly valued on the classic scene, but you just
landfill.
Ever be that sought after, but who knows? This leads me on to something I was thinking yesterday. I was in an Uber, and it was a Seat Alhambra.
And
it was probably about... 6 or 7 years old, and it was making a funny noise that I think might have been a wheel bearing, but it was not good.
A droney one?
Well, it wasn't, but it wasn't consistent. So it could have been, I don't know, it felt like it was worse at speed. Anyway, it was doing that, and the guy had put a plastic... basically like a shower curtain between the front seats and the back, you know, for sort of COVID reasons.
And I was looking at it. Plastic shower curtain.
Well, it was a plastic... Yeah. But actually quite unpleasant to look through. If you tried to look forward through the windscreen, it was too ripply and it was weird. So you had to look out the side window.
Well, like someone had rubbed Vaseline in your eyes.
Yeah, or that you were, you know, having some kind of episode or had dropped some acid or something. It was an odd effect that wasn't very pleasant in a moving vehicle.
Yeah,
but what I was looking at was that he attached the plastic screen, because it was, you know, it was soft like a shower curtain. He'd attached it to the roof by stapling it to the roof lining. And I was like, and some of the staples had come away at one corner, and you could see that, you know, sort of like there's a kind of mark and some just holes fired in the roof lining. I just went,
that is the hasty, myself, that's the most hasty COVID protection. He had 1 minute to protect his taxi against
COVID.
Yeah,
he might as well just stretch some cling film between the seats. But I was looking at it, I was going, well, now, when he takes this screen down, when he comes to sell this car, that's just going to be a mark against it, isn't it? Why are there all these staple marks in the headlining? And then I thought, is being a minicab the last thing a car ever does?
Oh, completely.
I sort of feel it is.
They get traded within the minicab community. My mate Ed, Party Boy, who's the taxi driver in Essex, he's not a minicab as such, he's pre-book. But he buys cabs from other cab drivers because he says there's some cab drivers that are snobs and they won't keep their cab for more than 2 or 3 years.
Oh.
But because once a car's been a cab, it's almost got automotive leprosy, like a Q plate. Nobody wants to buy an ex-taxi because the connotations are such where you go, what? So 100 people have vommed, been fingered, possibly had a heart attack, whatever, and it bled out, whatever's happened in a taxi, you don't want to know. So therefore, he buys really good taxis off taxi snobs, and then he'll run them until they die. And what he does is he also has, he has a small graveyard of donor cabs, so that when he's running his two cabs simultaneously, he has, he's got donors. It's brilliant. I've never seen such hard-working Zafiras in my life. Yeah. And he said that he always gets really high spec ones in vulgar colourways because he said that's the best thing for a cab. He said, I get a high spec Zafira off the private market, which someone's ordered in absolutely appalling internal or exterior colours. He says, it doesn't matter to me because I just put, it has taxi decals on it and it immediately gets, has seat covers and gets put to work. So he had one that was sort of, it's champagne gold on the outside. And on, I mean, like on a Zafira that's like 5 years, 4 years old, it just didn't work. And then, and the, I can't remember, the interior was not right, did not match the interior. Or he's had ones where he's just bought one. He's done this. He's bought a good quality Zafira just because the interior is a much better spec, and he's just spent a day swapping the entire interior, including door panels, over to his taxi, and then sold it again.
Oh my god!
Yeah, he's just done that. Yeah,
I'm just looking at Zafiras actually. Since I had Auto Trader open anymore, I found a champagne gold one.
Cheeky,
is this, are these like old shape ones, not the one that they called the Zafira Sport Tour or whatever it was? These are like sort of your classic first, second generation.
Yeah, this is his. Yeah, he gets the last. He gets his latest.
I never thought I'd use
the
phrase "classic Zafira," but there we go.
Classic Zafira.
Classic Zafira magazine in shops now.
No, classic Zafira sounds like a violin playing technique. Isn't it?
Yes.
You know, where you, or you know, some form of flamenco guitar. You go, oh, obviously, to achieve that, he's going for the classic Zafira, where the forefinger always works double time, and the wrist tends to get damaged from prolonged play.
Of course, the thing about Vanessa May is she has absolutely immaculate classic Zafira technique.
Flawless.
So I have various Zafiras here, and it's sort of making me feel a bit queasy just browsing them. I don't, because they immediately just, they all look like minicabs now, these old Zafiras. They're just, see, here's one. You should tell your mate about this. This is a first generation one. It's got 174,000 miles on it, and it's maroon, but it's got a sort of beige interior, which just looks, I mean, it just looks like stains. The interior just looks like stains.
That's born to cab. That car is born to cab.
Yeah, it's got air conditioning.
I forgot. Did I ever tell you about when Party Boy and his wife came to see us when we were down in Cornwall on holiday? This was 3 years ago now. We were in St Mawes on holiday. I'd gone down there. I'd borrowed a Volvo V90. The V90, isn't it? Yeah, the new at the time V90. If you know St Mawes, it's an incredibly narrow fishing village, but it's idyllic. We managed to get some parking just off the street, but I mean, honestly, this Volvo took up the entire street, so it took me about half an hour to get it parked. I'm sure I told you this. Anyway, a couple of days later, Party Boy said, "Oh, I've got a day off. I'll come down with Hannah and my daughter. We'll come and see you for the day." I said, "Yeah, that's great." Gave him the address of the cottage we'd rented, And he said, "Oh, I'll come down in Hannah's car," which was the ex Northern Ireland plainclothes detective car that I told you about. You know, the one where you can switch off the rear lights and the brake lights with the switch under the. He'd not long bought that car. And he came down in it and he phoned me. He said, I'm nearly in the village. I'm in the village. And I went, "Oh, cool. Okay. We'll see you soon then. Great. We're just on the beach, but I'll walk up." Call me again about 5 minutes later to say, "Johnny, it's really narrow." I went, yeah. I said, "It is, Ed. It's super narrow. Honestly, it's incredibly narrow, but Cornish village." He said, "But I don't know if the car will get through." I said, No. I got the Volvo through. It's okay." He said, "Are you sure, Johnny?" I said, "Yeah, I'm absolutely sure." Anyway, let's just say there were some crossed wires. Ed had come in from a completely different direction to me, and he was going down a public footpath, which was... He was going down a public footpath, which led to a load of people's... It did lead to our cottage, but it was a footpath, and it was tapering, so it was this funnel effect. Oh. And not just that. The walls were made out of flintstone, sort of sharp pebble.
Yeah.
Like the wall on a Goodwood Festival of Speed, the flint wall. It looked like that, but it was tapering. Anyway, so he phoned me and he said, I don't know how you got your Volvo down there. I think I've got the car stuck. So I ran around the corner and found him. The car was almost wedged. But he just looked at me, wound the window down, we were shouting. I said, "Ed, that's not a road." And he went, "What?" He said, "Well, you just said it. You said it would be okay." I said, "Yeah, but you've come in the wrong way." He said, "Oh, I wonder why it was so narrow." Anyway, he said, "It doesn't matter anyway." And he just kept driving the car forward, knowing that it was scrunching on both sides. And he flattened the whole arch on one side.
Oh.
He went, "It's okay. I can get that sorted for about 150 quid. And he just kept going. And so he scrunched this car and just couldn't stop laughing about it. And got it repaired a few weeks later. And then his wife was driving it, and somebody T-boned her on a roundabout on the same side. The insurance wrote the car off, gave them more money for the car than he ever paid. He got his mate to repaint that side again because it wasn't that badly damaged, and he put a door on it from a donor car. He said that car's paid itself back like three times. He said it just won't die. He's still got it now. It's the model of Astra that doesn't require any road tax, or it's like £10 a year to tax. Is it Ecokinetic? What's the?
Oh right, is it? Okay,
it's a small petrol-engined Astra, and I can't remember what that. Is
the way you said that though, it's that model of Astra that doesn't require any road tax. I mean, technically, that's any Astra if you want to chance your arm against the polis,
sawn it.
it's that model of Astra that doesn't need any road tax because it lives in a scrapyard. I did
wonder though, I felt bad because of the description of like, it's really narrow, but you will get through, and then I realized it was a public footpath.
I think you were sort of relying on your friend having the common sense not to drive down a footpath, which I feel like, when was the last time I've seen people driving down footpaths where you just go, there's sort of context clues here as to why you shouldn't be driving down here, and yet here you are.
I'm sure some listeners have done that, where they've accidentally got into it. But I accidentally, when I first moved to Cheshire, I drove into a pedestrianised zone very slowly. On a Saturday afternoon, I was looking for a shop to collect. So I had to collect something heavy that required you to just pretty much offer the car up to the side of the shop, but didn't realise I was in a full-on pedestrianised zone. I was getting people flicking all sorts of signs at me. But yeah, I think it was because I was just driving a Ford Granada with a leopard print interior, but I don't know.
I was going to tell you about a couple of things I saw recently. Well, one of them, you know more about motorbikes than I do. I saw a man, this was yesterday in fact, I saw a man on a motorbike where he sat too low. The seat of the bike was too close to the floor. It wasn't a monkey bike. It wasn't
too
like a
low.
Sort of, it was just, and I was desperately trying
was
to see
chopper?
What kind of, no, it was a normal motorcycle, but the seat was sort of somehow too low and he looked ridiculous. And I was trying to take a picture, but it was hard because he was pulling out of a junction.
Was it where the seat is just a circle of leather there's no padding, and it's on the frame, and the yes. frame's been chopped so that it goes right down to the rear wheel.
This,
so your
no,
bum
this didn't
is almost
like
on the rear wheel.
This oh, it didn't like look something. Custom. And I was desperately trying to see, and it wasn't. I could see there was something written on the tank, but it wasn't a manufacturer that I recognised, and I couldn't quite make it out. And I was, it was weird.
It wasn't a road legal trials bike, was it?
No,
because modern trials bikes don't have
it looked seats. Like a normal motorcycle, but it just the man sat too low and he looked ridiculous. And I was sort of edging through a crowd of people trying to get closer and closer to this so I could take a picture to show you, and to try and see what make it was. And it looked like it said tomato or something on the tank, and then I think it said something like 75D on the. There's a bit of metalwork sort of below the saddle.
Are you sure this wasn't custom?
Well, if it was, he just made a normal motorcycle worse. I mean, bear in mind, he was stopped at a T-junction as well, so he got his feet on the ground, and he just looked like he was squatting on a latrine. It was the most comical thing, and I thought, I've got to find out what that motorbike is. But I he drove off before I could.
It didn't have, like, ape hangers or anything like that, did it?
No, that's what I mean. I just picture a sort of very normal kind of... It was a bit... You know, it's a bit weedy looking, like so. I'd imagine it's some kind of 125, maybe, but I don't know.
I'm very interested now.
But it sat. It made the right. You know, and it wasn't. I thought, is that an incredibly tall man on a small motorcycle? But no, I think he was a sort of average height man on a poorly designed motorcycle.
I appreciate.
I was properly
a lot of
laughing
custom
at
bikes.
It. It was really funny.
I do appreciate a lot of custom bikes, but there's two elements of custom biking which I still just can't get my head around, because I don't think that the looks outweigh the practicality of it. And one of them is ape hanger bars, where you probably put your back out. You probably separate the discs in your spine, because you've got to fully stretch your arms to the sky. But of course, the steering has a sort of tiller effect. So when you go to turn, you do have to lift your ass off the seat, I think.
Oh,
well, if they're really high ape hangers, yeah. So those I don't get, and I think, oh, you know, when you, that, I don't know, I think I personally think they look a bit shit. And then the second one is the peanut tank, which looks very cool on a custom bike. But it only carries like a gallon of fuel, and
yeah,
if you've got that,
why?
If you've got that on a 1,000cc Triumph or a Harley, I know a guy with a peanut tank. Okay, and I said this to him because he goes to these bike shows. He rides it to a bike show. I said, "How do you actually do it?" He said, "Oh, I carry petrol in a rucksack."
Fucking hell.
As if riding a motorbike didn't carry enough risks. He's like, yeah, I put a backpack on, and I put like a jerry can in a backpack. So I said, what? So you got 5 litre fuel tank on the bike between your legs, and you know it does a certain amount. He goes, yeah, I'll do like, I don't know, whatever it is. Let's say 50 miles. I'll do 50 miles on that, and I'll know then to pull in. And I'll get my backpack out, and I'll just put another gallon or whatever it is in, 2 gallons.
Shitting Christmas.
I'm like, is it worth it? Because, like, don't get me wrong, I've had some silly cars, silly low, stupidly impractical cars, but I don't know, I feel like the peanut tank, what's the car equivalent of a peanut tank? I remember the Mitsubishi Evo FQ400. It was a combination of the big power and the small fuel tank, which made it comically low range.
Yeah.
But there must be other cars out there, I'm sure.
Well, on that note, something I can't quite figure out is that I was just reading reviews of the new Skoda Fabia, and it comes as standard with a 40-litre tank, but as an option, you can have a 50-litre tank. And I was sort of like, why is it an option? Why not just make it standard? I can't imagine the cost to Skoda of slightly different plastic moulding.
Well, you say that, but actually,
greater.
The car I went on holiday into the other week when Mrs. Smith broke her leg, Audi A6 all-road diesel, that had in the options list, because I noticed it, that had a long-range fuel tank option, which was only, I think, 10 litres more or 15 litres more. So it wasn't like significantly bigger. It wasn't like a Dakar motorbike saddle tank. So I was thinking, do you know what I mean? If it was sort of Cannonball Run style and you were like, OK, I'm going to tick the long range tank option, which takes it from 60 litres to 290 litres. You'd be like a long you'd be a long distance lorry driver. You just fill it up every 3 weeks, which would just be amazing.
OK, it's not. Fill up every year. No.
It'd just be amazing, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe. Hang on a minute. If are we missing something here? Well, if you say you go into a garage and order an Audi Allroad or a Skoda Fabia, and you say, actually, I'd like the extra 10 litres, please. They just give you that bloke's rucksack and go, there you go, mate. Fill that up.
Oh, yeah, and put
there's
it in the back.
Your extra range, yeah.
It just comes with a rucksack of fuel.
That's a rucksack of petrol.
Is it a thing now? Maybe is it as we're going into FEVs, maybe as we're going into plug-in hybrids, where the fuel tank on a plug-in hybrid is typically smaller to package the extra electric motor, batteries, etc. in a car that was designed for pistons. Mm. Maybe that's the reason they've got two tanks on the shelf and they're like, yeah, whatever, don't care. I wonder how many people actually bother to look at that sort of thing.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because actually I was really, I wanted to know what size the tank was on the old Fabia, because I'm a really interesting guy.
You are.
But I just wondered, it's bloody hard
to find. You're a wildcat, you are.
As an aside, a lot of car manufacturers' websites these days are an utter frigging shit show. You cannot find any actual information. You can only find lifestyle messaging and toss. It's just infuriating. Well, and sometimes this stuff isn't in the sort of press bump, which we often have access to.
Would you want to know the... I can tell you firsthand the ultimate version of that. Borrowing a camper van, a Volkswagen Grand California, knowing that you've ordered the bigger one than the standard wheelbase one, which is 4-berth...
Mm. And what, it arrives. Did you have the motherfucker one?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It arrived. I was thinking, we're going to go away for 4 nights. It's going to be magic. Okay, how many berths is it? It's bigger than the 4-berth. So how big is it?
Now, wait, is this where it actually turns out to be 2-berth?
It's fucking 2-berth. It's fucking 2-berth, Rich.
They put a loo and a shower and...
No, the other one's got that, apparently. But it's longer wheelbase, bigger van.
Yeah.
But it's 2-berth, and it doesn't say it in the literature, Richard.
What happened?
I left my wife behind.
You're joking.
No, I went on holiday with the children, and my wife with a broken leg stayed at home on her own.
What?
That's what we did. It's the only solution. I'm not joking.
Oh, my God. Are you doing a video about that, VW? Camper.
No, I didn't. I felt like it was there was too much going on at the time. I would have liked to have made a video with it. I'll have to book it in again to do, because I have actually experienced it as a full camper van, and I've done a pretty long journey in it, lived in it for 5 nights, and thoroughly enjoyed myself. However, I just double checked on the website, and as you say, loads of lifestyle messaging, loads of aspirational pictures and stuff. It's like, I just want to know. It's not clear that the bigger, longer wheelbase van isn't 4-berth as well. So why would you buy a bigger camper van with more room in it that can only bed 2 people? So I slept with my 2 children in it's a good size bed, don't get me wrong. It's a sort of fixed double. It might be a king size. It's the whole back end of the van. Yeah. So it's okay. But for 4, it would have been sardines. 3 was enough. My kids are not tiny anymore. You know, the 10 and 12. So... it was interesting. But I have to say, it certainly soured the start of the holiday by leaving one of the family members behind.
Were you frantically searching around the van for the other bed?
Oh, to the point where I started to go out in the garage, I was measuring up a piece of plywood, because I said, I'm just going to cut a piece of plywood. The front seats go round, you know, into captain's chairs.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'll just put a piece of ply down and my son can go on that on a memory foam mattress, no bother. That sorts that. And then the awning comes out. I was all for putting the daughter in a small tent. We've got a small tent. But she was like, no, I'm not going to sleep out there on my own. I'll only sleep out there with someone else, because we were camping in a forest, and she was, I don't know, talking about zombies or wolves. So yeah, I was like, so yeah, it got really complicated really quickly.
There you go. That's the thing, but it's because of a lack of information on the website. The old Skoda Fabia has a 45-litre fuel tank, by the way. So what they've done
Well, that was the important difference. Yeah, that was very important.
Now it's 40 unless you specify 50. But I don't think there is electrification coming to that Fabia, so I don't know why your point about maybe the smaller tank is to make room for batteries and shizzle. I don't think that's
happening. It's the Miser tank option.
Yeah, it's just
it?
Why would you want... It's like having a smaller fuel tank is having a bigger one. It's like it's sort of there's no difference to you except that it's more convenient to have a bigger one. Maybe psychologically people don't like to feel, you know, if the pump clicks off and it's lots of money on the display, is that people get they think the car's not as economical as it is. I just don't understand it.
I guess carrying a heavy car will make the MPG theoretically worse, but by how much? You know, if it's such a small percentage that nobody's really counting, then who cares?
So 10 litres of fuel would weigh 10 kilos, right?
Yeah. Is it like the old days of Prohibition when cars were chosen and specced and modified in order to carry the illegal special juice? And actually, a guy in the Mopar Muscle Club UK has bought and imported a Dodge Charger, which genuinely was bought new for Prohibition era moonshine running, and it has all these strange mods on it, and it's actually quite a valuable car now because it's been verified as it was a pair of them bought by a still owner who used to run the shine, and it's great because it's a high power manual, but they modified the suspension so that even when fully laden it didn't sit lower, it sat at exactly the same ride height.
Nice.
It's very cool. Yeah, I know.
That's the basis of the Dukes of Hazzard, though, isn't it? That was inspired by a one-off called the Moonshiners, I think, wasn't it?
Called Moonshiners or Shine Runners or something.
Yeah, Bo and Luke are Shine Runners.
Yeah.
Good.
We should
wrap things up. If you want to drop us a line, we had loads of messages last week. I'm sorry, maybe next show we'll read some out because we had some very good stories. Better than any of the shit we come up with, frankly. So maybe next week we'll read out some stories. But in the meantime, if you want to drop us a line, hello@smithandsniff.com is our email address. Before we go, I have four things to tell you. They are: one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show, and there is The Late Break Show Live. The next event is the 11th of September in Leicestershire. Full details at thelatebreakshow.com/tour.
/tour or /Leicestershire.
Oh, okay.
And we welcome you.
Yeah, we'll both be there. We'll be doing a bit of this, sort of talking nonsense, but also just wandering about and all manner of things. So that's that. Two, I have various books out. One of them is called And On That Bombshell. It's a book about working on Top Gear 2002 to 2015. It's got a story in it about James May losing his temper over some pasties. available in all good bookshops, probably charity shops by now, and of course online. And I promoted that book this week because a listener got in touch and said that if him and his dad are listening to the podcast together, they take wagers on which book I'm going to plug at the end of the show. Sort of like if older listeners will remember the TV show Bod. And at the end of it, you would guess which milkshake the frog was going to choose.
I remember
it's
Bod.
Sort of like that. So for a chap called Charlie Bird, hello Charlie, I said I would throw you a curveball this week. There it is. I've plugged the Top Gear book, not one of them.
You're amazing, Rich.
Car trivia ones. The third thing I have to tell you is that we have merch.
We do. Drum roll.
Budding, we have some t-shirts with Otsot written on them. We have a t-shirt with Sport written on it. We've got some Otsot mugs. We've got a lovely little tin mug if you want something to take down garage.
We have an enamel shed / camping mug.
Or tap on the pipes if you're in a prison movie to signal to other inmates. We have stickers as well. And this is a sort of trial run of stuff. So get in there. It's all actually apparently the t-shirts have sold out or almost sold out, but we're getting some more in. So
we're trying our best to keep up with demand, but it's been lovely. Anyone who's already ordered stuff, thank you so much. And yeah, we've got a reasonable selection, and we will add to the selection as we go. But yeah, it's merch like that that keeps us going.
Keeps us
it
going.
It does. Keeps me banging on the pipes, you bastard.
Every little helps. So shop.thelatebreakshow.com/collections/smith-and-sniff. Catchy. You just go to the Late Break Show website and look in the shop. You'll be able
it's
to
probably
find
easier.
Our stuff there,
it's
as well as merch related to Carl Pervert and the Late Break Show. So it's all good stuff. And the fourth thing I have to tell you is that Pet Shop Boys' song So Hard, one of the standout tracks from their excellent Behaviour album from the 90s, contains samples from a porn movie of a woman saying, "It's so hard."
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you listen towards the end, it's quite heavily treated, but you hear someone go, "It's so hard," and it was a sample from a porn film.
Oh, that's film, nice. That's
the
nice.
Song itself that, is not that, about that, pornography.
That picture of you on Twitter dressed up as Chris Lowe from the Pet Shop Boys was had me in stitches, I have to say.
Oh yeah, well that was
indoor
puffer jacket, sunglasses, cap. I thought it was like, because I'm going to a fancy dress party next month and I was going to go as Chris Lowe. I was going to buy some different clobber for it, but I realized things I had in the house made a passable Chris Lowe impression. So that was on the 40th anniversary of Tennant and Lowe first meeting. That was why I put that on.
Can you get put some tin foil around a piece of cardboard and make the front of your cap metal? I think that might work.
Well, no, what I was going to do is get one of those boy caps like he used to wear in the 80s, but they're quite expensive, so I might not bother.
Just make one.
I wanted to get a keytar as well. I thought, as we go to this party, you might as well go all in. I'll get an old keytar. I thought I'll buy a broken one off eBay or something, and then you know I could just have it as a prop.
They're worth
even
a fortune.
Broken key, they're really expensive.
Yeah, they've got quite a big following. Early synth has quite a following. So
anyway, that's that for this. Thank you ever so much for listening. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.
We won't see you. We won't see them. We'll hear them. No, they won't.
No, it's
they
a
won't,
one-way
no,
street,
no,
really, isn't
hear
it?
Us.
All right, you'll hear us same time next week if you so choose.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
I'll tell you next week about a guy I know who says and all that at the end of every sentence. Who I've just remembered. He used to run a Volkswagen club. He used to phone me up every 3 days to tell me how to jamboree and a barbecue and all that. Goodbye.
Johnny, we're having a barbecue with all the VW vans and all that. We're going to have a real big gathering and we're going kind of Peak District and all that. It's going to be great. The kids are all invited and all that. And everyone's welcome. Come on, bring your awnings and all that. We'll make it like a real big jamboree of it.